my gosh. I tell you, I could listen to that all day. And I'm sure you moved a body part or two listening to that. That's Sergio Mendez with Fanfara. It's from his acclaimed, award-winning, multi-award-winning album of 1992, Brasileiro. Great batucada music. This is Lead Stories. I'm Nutrice Lead. And guess what? It's Friday, May the 22nd, 2015. Congratulate yourselves. You have survived yet another week of a lot of stuff being directed at your mind. Fortunately, this is Free Your Mind Friday so that you can expiate these demons that have been hounding you all week here on this program that is aimed at getting us to talk to each other about issues that you think warrant further discussion or debate. It doesn't necessarily have to be about the news of the day, although it could be, but it could also be about something that you think is important enough to merit further discussion. All right, so there we go. A couple of things, though, I just wanted to let you know. I'm so grateful for all these messages of support and good vibes coming my way, and I'm leaning on them pretty heavily as I go through Gary's regimen. I am very, very, I'm in very good spirits, as you can tell. And I thank you so much for taking the time to share your good thoughts and prayers and your wonderful heart. Thank you so much for that. But let's get down to business. Let's get some talking happening here at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, the whole point of radio, it seems to me, is to get information going, the flow of information going, and we have a great deal to offer each other, and this is also very important. You know, we have to increase the regularity, I think, of people being comfortable enough to feel that they have something to offer and put in the pot. And it is very, very important that you feel comfortable in doing so because, believe it or not, this is a classroom. We teach each other. We have things to offer each other. We have acquired wisdom, many, many of us, the hard way. But we have wisdom that we can share. We have insights and analyses that we can share, thoughts that we can share. And they're all valid. And I say this because it is, in many cases, not on this program, certainly, and I don't think on PRN generally, that people are intimidated by the idea that maybe what they have to say would be upsetting to people. But we know that you're offering your sincerest thoughts. You're offering them with a purpose, and the purpose is really to share what you're thinking. And there's validity to what you're thinking. We're not in the business of harming people, and we're not in the business of insulting people and saying things just for the sake of being outlandish. That is not the history of this program. But I do want to encourage you to feel comfortable about the idea that you have the right to occupy intellectual space, and what you have to offer is very valuable, and you should feel very good about putting your two cents into the pot. All right, enough of my talking. Let's get to the calls at 888-874-4888 from New York City. Joel, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. And you?
Oh, that's good. I'm excellent. I'm excellent. I would like to talk a little bit about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that is about to be enacted, if that's all right.
Sure.
And Dr. Horn mentioned it the other day, but I'd like to take a slightly different tack than him because he seemed to indicate that there might be some ways in which the TPP is a kind of measure that really wouldn't be in the support of African-American people generally, primarily because he thought that this whole question of sovereignty that has been raised might really be a ruse for states' rights, if you recall.
Yes, I do.
And that, right. And I think he's wrong, quite frankly. I think that the TPP, very much like the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, which was concluded under Clinton, promises jobs, just like NAFTA did, promises balanced economic growth and prosperity. But NAFTA instead created economic devastation, not only in the agricultural sector of Mexico, but an enormous loss of jobs in the United States, especially in communities where African-American workers were prominent. And if concluded, what the TPP will do will continue the process of concentrating economic power in the hands of U.S.-based transnational corporations and financial institutions. And while the 1% who have no allegiance to any national territory or state will grow richer, the agreement will pit workers in the U.S., especially black and brown workers, into cutthroat competition with exploited workers, this time in Asia, who will be paid slave wages to produce for the U.S. and European markets. And so that this notion that Obama is pitching that the agreement will produce increased exports from the U.S. is therefore a blatant lie. So that's why I think for African Americans as a group who have objectively suffered more than any other group domestically as a result of the turn toward neoliberal globalization in the 70s, right through the crisis of 2008, it means that that anything such as, say, Obama's phony urban promises zones to all of these trade agreements, the TPP and its European counterpart, I think has to be embraced as really fundamental for resistance and for the survival of all people, including black people. The other thing, it seems to me, that's important about this is that the propaganda campaign has begun. And I think that Obama traveled to Nike headquarters in Oregon to pitch for the TPP, that he and that he'd be given authority to negotiate not only the TPP, but also the transatlantic trade investor partnership, its Atlantic counterpart, and that the mechanism that he wants to utilize is fast-track promotion authority so he can really circumvent legislative hearings. And it seems to me that if it's concluded, and I think there are 12 countries that are involved in this, it will be the largest trading bloc on the planet. It will comprise some 40% of the world's economy. And it will allow private corporations to sue governments for damages on future profits if governments enact laws to protect their citizens in areas like the environment, food safety regulations, labor protections, and the like, and would allow these transnational corporations to exploit the labor of those countries by paying workers a fraction of the wages that they would make if they produce products in the United States. And consequently, this is why Obama wants to fast track it. And it seems to me that African Americans, but really all Americans, should be asking questions such as, why are Obama and the economic elite pushing another neoliberal trade agreement when the failure of neoliberal policies to provide sustainable economic development and security for all of our communities is so obvious? And if, according to Obama, the agreement will benefit working people by generating jobs and improving economic conditions, why are the provisions secret, and why can't the representatives of the people of the U.S. Congress be privy to the details of the agreement and be able to examine, reject, and alter the provisions as needed?
Well, I think, let me take a shot here at what you've offered, which, by the way, is excellent. I did not get the sense that Gerald Horn was in any way favoring or in favor of Obama's approach and the Trans-Pacific Partnership in particular. What he was raising, and I raise the question now with you, was the neoliberal tact in arguing against the Trans-Pacific Partnership is itself flawed, and in fact, it harkens back to the old days in which there is this presumption that, as they say, as this the liberal, the neoliberal contingent says, so is it. But the question is, when they argue about all these things, and the arguments, again, nobody's really taking issue with it. I don't think that we're arguing about all of the things that you've just said. I think we've said that on the program enough to know that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a really bad, bad piece of business. But what he was hinting at was really the hypocrisy of the neoliberal agenda, in which all of a sudden there's this concern about how the Trans-Pacific Partnership would affect people of color. And his contention was that that was a purely hypocritical argument.
No, I understand that. I understand that fully. But it seems to me that logically is a kind of what logicians call reductio ad absurdum, where you break the argument down to its basic premise, but the basic premise forces you not to really deal with the consequences of your argument. What I mean by that is that when you get somebody like Rand Paul getting up on in the Senate and attacking the Trans-Pacific Partnership, knowing full well that the guy is a libertarian conservative, right? It doesn't mean that one has to accept, and one certainly doesn't accept, the premises behind his libertarianism. But in politics, you build support wherever you can get it. So if Rand Paul is going to attack the TPP, you accept his support. Even though you know that underneath it lies a set of contentions that are flawed. You see what I'm saying? The same thing is true with the support that libertarians give to peace groups who want to end, a U.S. hegemonic policy and constant warfare. We know what their assumptions are. Their assumptions are wrong, but the very fact that they're calling for an end for war, and someone like Bernie Sanders, who calls himself a socialist, isn't.
I'm going to ask you to just do one program on Bernie Sanders.
We're about to start the Left Forum in New York, which is a very, very important conference that meets once a year at John Jay College. And I think that these issues are going to come up. For one, we have to deal with the fact that people need to really put their feet where their mouths are. Or, someone like Tom Hayden is a good example of this. Hayden likes to call himself a articulator of positions on the left, yet ever since 1982, he has been really a kind of accommodationist. I remember when he ran for, and then I'm getting off on an aside now, but so I want to be very quick about this so others can speak. But I remember when he ran for the state legislature in California in 1982 and ran for a district in Santa Monica. This is only 20 years after he helped form SDS and write its really important Port Huron statement. And he decided to run for the California legislature. Okay. He ran as a Democrat, which of course was a big surprise, and this was exactly at the moment that the Israelis had invaded Lebanon. And because of the large and important upper middle class and middle class Jewish vote in Santa Monica, he caved on this question. Here is the guy who helped found SCS. So this is what I mean about being very, very careful about who we support and why we support these. But anyway, that's not what I wanted to bring up. I just simply wanted to say that regardless of my subtle, difference with Dr. Horn on this issue, I think it's really important that we all fight the administration on this because, workers' rights are really going to be circumscribed if this gets through. And there's going to be a massive amount of jobs that are going to be outsourced, remaining factories are going to be downsized, and this is going to really hit African Americans. So we've seen a 30-year history in cities that have large African American populations, from East St. Louis, Illinois, to Gary, Indiana, to Baltimore, Maryland, to Camden, New Jersey, that have all been turned into sacrifice zones because of this, and this will only accelerate the process.
Thank you so much for your call today, Joel.
Okay. You're welcome.
Really appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. From Washington, D.C., Ola, you're on the air. Hello? Oh, we lost Ola from Washington, D.C. Berkeley, Harvey, you're on the air. Okay. We're having a little phone tag going on. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. If for some reason we seem to have a little issue with the phones, but it should be fine by now. 888-874-4888. The issue that Joel raises, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I'm still stuck at the bottom line. The bottom line is, why should this be a secret deal? Why can't it be publicly discussed? Why is it that not even members of Congress need to know? What is this? I'm just, that basic principle alone, never mind all of the other things, and they are true, they are pertinent. But what is this that we have arrived at a point in this so-called very democratic society that a major, major initiative like this, which of course involves trillions of dollars, it's just not to be known. We're not to know what is in it. From Washington, good. Ola, you're back. Are you there? Okay. From Florida, Ray, you're on the air.
I would like to talk about the TPP. And in the past,
is this Ray?
Yes, Ray.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hi. I've read two pieces, one at Common Dreams and maybe one at Counterpunch, where repeatedly journalists are saying that representatives like Alan Grayson and Elizabeth Warren, they go into the little secret room where the TPP is and they're not allowed to take any notes, they can't photograph the pages. And then, you know, both Warren and Grayson have come out saying that it is illegal for them to talk about the specifics of what they've seen. So I was wondering if you had any insight as to who made this illegal, because Congress probably wouldn't pass a law to muzzle themselves. I don't think the White House can muzzle an entire branch of government. And yet, I'm seeing this repeatedly. Do you have any idea how this is happening?
It's like discussing Israel and its atomic weapons. It literally could cost you, and members of Congress are not allowed to discuss it. The governmental employees are not allowed to discuss it. They can be charged and imprisoned for discussing Israel's nuclear program.
Our government employees.
Now, how did that come to be, that members of Congress have agreed simply to not discuss something that is clearly in the interest of the public? Why it is that there is a threat of fine and imprisonment for that? How did that come to be? Again, you know, the notion of democracy stares you right in the face, doesn't it?
Well, it's looking somewhere. I'm not sure if it's looking us in the face. But, you know, so maybe this is Langley, maybe this is some sort of, like, FBI threat or something?
We don't know.
You've got something on you, therefore you better not talk about things that we don't want you to discuss?
It's a very good question. I should look into that. Why is it that this thing is so secret? I've asked a question, and nobody knows the answer.
Yeah.
All we know is that it's secret. We're not supposed to discuss it. It's not known. The terms are not known. And, of course, we have people agreeing to abide by all these terms and conditions, including people like Warren and Sanders and others, who you would expect would be, you know, kind of renegades and would just make it public.
And Grayson, too. You know,
so,
he's not
exactly. So,
he's got plenty of backbone.
We don't know why they are agreeing to go along with it. It's a very good question.
Okay.
Thank you, Ray, for calling.
Right. Sure thing. Bye.
Thanks. Ola. I've been trying to get you, but we keep getting disconnected from you. I don't know why. But Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrecht.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. And blessings surround you and good health be with you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You are a gift to all of us. I follow current technology, and for that reason, I believe the Trans-Pacific Partnership will lead to a dramatic growth in crime and prisons for profit. And here's a couple headlines to demonstrate what I mean. Here's the first one. Robots are rising, will cause layoffs. Purchases of industrial robots rose 27% in 2014, with China and South Korea buying more than 95,000. And the second headline, China building all-robotic manufacturing plant. Construction work has begun on the first factory in China, China's manufacturing hub that uses only robots. By 2016, up to 1,500 of Chinese industrial enterprises will begin replacing humans with robots. And in a way, you have to put yourself in the employer's position. If you have a choice between hiring a human being and leasing a robot, you'd have to realize that, first of all, robots work 24 hours a day, 365 days a year without complaint. They don't require vacations, holidays, 6 days off, coffee breaks or sleep. Robots don't ask for raises or retirement benefits. Robots require no health insurance or medical costs. Robots don't join unions or ask for union rights. Robots don't need food services or bathroom facilities. They don't consume much water. They don't need garbage collection. They don't need worker transportation. Robots don't have any bad habits or addictions to deal with. There's no theft or inventory loss. Robots don't daydream, get distracted, or waste time. And no one can work for less than robots, as far as I'm concerned. So the only way America can compete against this is to, number one, is to have our own robotic factories, which will diminish jobs. And number two is this will lead to fewer jobs, of course, and more crime. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership will herald an expansion in prisons for profit. Because it's America's answer to third world labor. And I believe that because of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, more working Americans will end up behind bars. I think of it as a new slavery. Aren't there debtors' prisons now in America? So I say, really, if we want to keep our jobs, we have to put up tariffs and not go with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because it's going to be prisons for profit all the way.
Thank you, Harvey, for your call.
Thank you.
From Mount Vernon, Jason, you're on the air.
Wow. It's Jason from Mount Vernon. I was going to wait until there's plenty of phone calls to share everyone to contribute all these new voices and all these new inspired people to contribute to your programming.
Okay.
The previous caller, the past two callers are 90% correct, if not 80% correct. And the only reason why I'm saying they're not 100% correct is because they have not quoted the laws that these public officials are supposed to follow when they are enacting legislation and policy. And there is no law that they can go into a press conference and say to the public that the TPP is confidential, or, in fact, anything that seems to be has a gag order on it, nuclear arsenals of Israel or the whatnot. Under United States Code, Title 42, 1983, anyone can look this up, United States Code, Title 42, 1983, any public official, you know, public officials take an oath to the office who harms or who obfuscates or does not reveal or cause damage to the citizens is committing treason. This is their policy. This is their statutes and codes for public officials who swear an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States. Obviously, they're not doing this, and there lies the problem. They're not the public officials who may be of good nature and may be on the progressive left or public officials who are from the Republican Party or independents are not following their own laws. They're committing treason.
All right. So what do you think ought to be done?
A complete media blitz of what is a true constitution of the United States, a complete media blitz on progressive radio stations of what is the true deception going on in this country. And that is far more than the corporate cartels, far more than corporate transnational companies. It's far more, it's bigger than, our financial capitalists running amok, destroying the markets worldwide and getting slapped on the wrist for a $5 billion fine. It needs to be a complete education information program, really, on any type of media program. Anyone that would have people who are learned in law and who also know about the historical history of how this country was founded to actually get that expressed to the listening audience. Currently now, it's a lot of splinter groups out there. There are several out there that I can name, but they don't mean anything if the listening audience is not up to a certain level of educational skills. You don't go to college without having first the rudimentary or the remedial skills of high school to get to a college-level understanding of what's really involved with the deception taking place on the citizens of the country. It's not just about white or black. It's more than that. It's what your other caller has alluded to. It's a form of slavery. It's a new form of slavery that we have to be aware of and reject it at all costs.
Thank you, Jason, for your call.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. This is PRN.FM. You're listening to Lead Stories. We'll take this short break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. It's Free Your Mind Friday. So free your mind. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and your calls at 888-874-4888. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is accounting for a great deal of discussion today. I was expecting that I would hear about that event, that major, major event in Waco, and your thoughts about how the media coverage of that was going. I thought we'd have some other things coming. Maybe this is coming in the second half of this program. But let's talk about what's of interest to you, what is of concern to you, and this is the forum to do it. Again, great thoughts, great ideas, and you can see considered thinking going on. And that is the purpose of the program. 888-874-4888. Well, a couple of things. I just thought it was of interest, you know, when the situation occurred in Waco, Texas, the big blowout that they're describing as a biker brawl and whatnot. I was very, very, I was following very closely how the media were covering this. And you see how it changes, the language is changing, the attitudes are changing, and now we have, you know, the story is in progress, And have you been checking out how the language is changing, how the attitudes are changing? The same with the Amtrak derailing that cost so many lives. How the language started out in the beginning and it's beginning to change. What is accounting for all of that? The situation in Iraq. The language is changing. It's a lot of fluid language now. You know, it's almost it's mind-boggling when you listen to how the media's attitudes change as the situation goes. And it depends really on, at least it seems that way to me, it depends on where and when the power elite enter. And they basically help the media to change their position, their tone, their language, their focus. And this is a very important thing to note in these stories, because more and more, when you examine the media coverage, just say in the past couple of weeks alone, on the same issue, how the language has changed, the attitudes have changed, even by the reporters, by the people discussing it, the so-called experts that they're calling in, to give us, from if we were to compare our information, let's say, about a particular subject, let's say about Waco, the biker brawl, as they call it, from the beginning until now, what has changed? Why has it changed? What is going on? And you say to yourself, well, gee, basically, I'm at the mercy of the media. They do whatever they want to do, and that in turn affects the way we think about things. And it was so telling this past week how media coverage of a couple of issues, several issues actually, just began to go through this change. And with it, of course, the public opinion about these things, how the media end up shaping our opinions, our ideas, even our actions. And they don't even bat an eye. You know, they just don't. And then they palm it off as, well, we're just doing our good, thorough reporting. We are getting the facts, and we're reporting the facts as we get to understand them. And yet, you can see from the very beginning, the reporting is done with a very distinctive attitude that suggests that somebody in the newsroom has an opinion about these things. They have come to conclusions about the stories that they're covering. And their opinions and conclusions ought to be our opinions and conclusions. But then as things go, you see then they change a little bit here. They tweak their opinions here and there. And suddenly, if you were to track where they were over the course of a week, you see how their attitudes and opinions are changing almost by the day. It's an amazing thing. But anyway, let's hear what you have to say. 888-874-4888. Now, next week, since we're closing out this week, next week we will, Professor Lumpkins, if you remember, Professor Lumpkins did a series on black labor during February, and he was supposed to come back and answer a number of your questions about that series. He'll be here on Wednesday to do just that. So keep that in mind. He's going to, of course, give us a brief overview again and close out the series. We did not have the time to do that because of my situation. So we will catch up and close that off next week, and we'll be doing some other great things next week. I hope you will be with us. All right. I'm not seeing any calls at the moment. It means that you're not calling in, or I mean, my eyes are just not working. Which is it? 888-874-4888. Okay. All right. Well, I want to talk also about, you know, journalism generally, and the fact that we all should develop these journalistic skills. If you can tell from the people who have called today alone, you can see that they have a body of knowledge that allows them to form starkly independent opinions, and that's very important. We heard Jason talk about the importance of getting up to snuff. We each are activists in our own right. We inform people, we affect opinions of other people we interact with, and so we have to see ourselves as agents of change. Now, we may not think of that as our titles. We're walking around, hello, my name is Joe, or my name is Barry, I'm an agent of change. But we actually are, because we affect people. We affect them by the way we talk and what we say and what we do. And what we should also recognize is that it calls upon us, therefore, to do as much as we possibly can to firm up our base, our knowledge base, so that when we talk, we have something worth offering to someone. And that allows us to bring some different perspective, perhaps, to that person's point of view. Now, people could say, well, that's proselytizing and whatnot. But in a way, just in life, we proselytize all the time. We influence people all the time in casual ways. In areas where we really could make a difference, and that is in talking to people and taking the time to share the knowledge that we have and opening ourselves to the knowledge that they have, that we can, you know, we can trade. We then are fulfilling our role. We don't go around saying, you know, with a placard saying, I'm an agent of change, but that's what we do. So why not make it a point to pay attention to these things and acquire these skills in the same way you acquire the skill of cooking or the skill of driving or any other skill. You pick up the skill of acquiring knowledge and sharing it. This is also political activism. You know, if you listened to Joel, you listened to Harvey, you listened to Jason, you listen to people who have taken the time and made the effort to acquire information and to distill it. And here we are in a forum where, with the free exchange of information in the short time that they interacted with us today, they were able to give us something to think about. And I think that's what we need to do as well. From New York, Jay, you're on the air.
Hello, you priest. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you?
Good. Glad to hear that. Just two quick things. I know you had mentioned earlier about what had happened in Texas with the Waco and the bikers. It's just amazing to me how the media has portrayed that. It just goes to show the double standard of incidents of group violence that separates whites and blacks. Ones are called thugs and the others are called a gang. And the manner in which they were treated in Texas compared to how they were treated in Baltimore just goes to show how racist this country really is. And how they will basically be heavy-handed with us, but will not be as heavy-handed when white folks decide that they're going to stand up and participate in violence, and that even the media perpetrates it also. I noticed how in Baltimore there was multi-day discussions on Morning Joe about what happened, but there was very, very little discussing of what happened in Waco, in Texas. And then this morning, I turned on Morning Joe before I left out to go to work, and they were talking about this gentleman who had killed a family, I think it was in Washington, or Chicago. I'm not really sure.
Washington, D.C. Washington.
Okay. And the way in which they repeatedly talked about that and gave that coverage, but when dealing with what happened in Texas, they basically gave it no coverage. And then, by my surprise, I was listening to the radio while working, and Geraldo, on his radio show, was talking about something going on here in New York about the top prep schools separating second, third, and fourth and fifth graders to teach them about race, putting white kids amongst white kids and Hispanic kids amongst Hispanics and blacks amongst blacks to teach them about race. And it just goes to show that, you know, there really isn't fairness in this country when it comes down to the description of race and the participation of society equally in discussing of race. And it's just wrong. It's totally wrong. But they want to give this illusion that we are a country that should be based on, as Waldo said, integration and getting along and forgetting about the past. You know, they constantly want us to forget about what happened to us hundreds of years ago. But my question always is, why should we?
All right. Thank you for your call today, Jay. Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
Thank you. From Philadelphia, I believe. Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. What are you offering today?
Well, first I'm offering thanks. Thanks for you, because you are a breath of fresh air, and you are a true scholar and a true journalist, in my opinion.
Oh, boy, did I fool you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I mean, look at what we're dealing with now with people who call themselves journalists. And that last caller was absolutely on point, I believe, in my opinion. But I like the way that you present the issues in a way that you ask people what, in a roundabout way, what do you plan to do about it? What is the solution? What do you plan to do? Because it's one thing to talk about things, but, you know, we need to find solutions. And I like the way that you present that, because at this point, you're right. We all need to be journalists, and we all need to be documenting what's going on. And we all need to be in contact with our government, because they are not in contact with us. Obviously, they are not responding to the people. From what I see in the polls, I mean, across the board, it's just kind of messed up. But like the last caller said, you know, it's very interesting. Now, here we have, quote unquote, white on white crime. If you look in the background in that Waco situation, that was a strip mall. That's like a total middle America, Americana strip mall. You saw Bed Bath and Beyond. You have a few restaurants. You know, people are out there with their families trying to have dinner. And if that was a group of black people, they probably would have dropped a bomb on them. You know, and it's like, oh, you know, it was just a bunch of thugs. We had to get rid of them. Because I remember moving to Philadelphia. You know what I mean? I remember that. They didn't have a problem burning the whole neighborhood down. They would have done that. I mean, period. But this is my concern. This is Friday. This is my concern. I want everyone of my age to think about this. I'll be 50 next year. And I remember when Reagan came in office, and that was when cuts in social programs and education really started. And he made it very clear that government was the problem, okay? And that was the beginning of this idea that privatization is a good thing. And what happened, what it seems to me, like I was fortunate enough to go to very good public schools and then to private schools. But it seems like when I was teaching, you know, in the Philadelphia public schools, that the situation, it was terrible. I mean, no wonder kids don't want to go to school. I mean, there's no toilet paper in the bathrooms, no soap. You got one-third of the kids that just sleep, one-third are listening, and one-third kind of ambivalent or they have disabilities. You know, and they expect you to teach 50 kids in the classroom. It's not going to work. And that's why I got out of teaching, number one. It was just a lost cause. It hurt. It really hurt. You know, and the kids who try to do something, they get ridiculed by the other children. You know, it's a mess. But let me backtrack. So we have a populace, I think, that is really abhorrently ignorant right now because of the failed school. We have people that have grown up. They have no idea how the government works. They haven't had civics. They're not able. They don't have the tools to make the decision. You know, they're too worried about the basketball game or the football game or, you know, just esoteric nonsense. I mean, that's a nice diversion once in a while, video games. You know, that's fine. But if everybody does that, we end up where we are right now. You know, and where we are right now is a bad place. We're in a bad place. We've got war criminals running around free, saying that they would do it all over again if they could, i.e., Dick Cheney. Did you hear him make that statement?
Yes.
That shock. I turned the computer off. I turned the computer off because I cannot take in so much negativity. And the thing is, we can't recover. This is like racism in this country. It's like when you get an infection, and your skin may heal up over a cut, and it'll be infected, but it'll be puffy, and you'll have pus coming out. This is the education system and racism in this country. It's a wound that's festering, and until we clean this wound out, it's infecting our whole body politic. Because a lot of white people, I mean, I'm around white people all the time, because when you get to a certain level as a black person, you know this, you know, we're comfortable being the only black person in the room. It's like, that's just the way it is sometimes. But they're not comfortable with that. If they're the only white person in the room, I gotta be quick. They, you know, they're very uncomfortable and they don't understand why, but, we have to get to the bottom of this, because it's polluting the whole country. Because When they hear it about this police violence, they don't get it. They don't understand it. When black people see police, we go the other way, because most times, it doesn't matter if the cop is white or black, because it's institutional. Most times, it's not going to be a positive encounter. It's just not. You know, white people see the police, and they're like, oh, thank God, my savior. No, we see the police, it's like, well, let me go the other way. And I know I'm kind of all over the place, but that's where we are. This infection has just spread. It's pus has spread and it's infected, and we have to clean this out. We have to clean this out.
Who are the and we?
Everyone. Because you know something? Everyone. Because I hear people who audibly seem Caucasian that call your show, and they know what's going on. So they need to speak up when they're at Thanksgiving dinner or whatever, and they hear Uncle Harry talking that nonsense. They need to call him on that. See, we have to take responsibility. Everyone, if people want this country to succeed, we need to take responsibility. Because I'll be honest with you, I'm in South Carolina. I still have my old phone number, but I'm in Tea Party Central. I'm 40 miles from the epicenter of the Republican Party, which is Lexington, South Carolina, right? And these people are serious. They are serious, hardcore. They want everything privatized. They don't understand. See, Oh, that's the point I really wanted to get across, and I know you have to go. But, see, privatization of government entities is okay sometimes. Let's say janitorial services, very simple things. But the government is not a business. When you talk about things should be privatized, when you have a company, your business is to make money. The government serves the people. It's not supposed to make money. It's supposed to serve the people and break even and maybe run a deficit, and that's okay. That's okay. I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay. And the last thing I will say is that people need to understand that Social Security cap needs to be raised, and then we wouldn't have this discussion about Social Security. How many people know that after about $113,000, that person or that family pays the same in Social Security tax as someone who makes $10,000 a year, you know, prorated? You sound great, Trees, and whatever you're doing, keep doing it, because you sound great.
Thank you so much, Khalil, for your call today. I'm glad that you were able, even if you thought you were rambling, it was very important rambling, because you touched on a number of issues that are worthy of further discussion. So thank you so much for contributing today.
Okay.
And thank you, Jay, and thank you, Harvey, and Joel, for your calls today. That brings us to the end of the program, and I hope you free your mind, continue to free your mind, not just today, but every day. Keep very close tabs on your mind. It's your most important and valuable asset. Stay tuned for more great programming here on PRN.FM, and we'll see each other on Monday. In the meantime, a great pleasure and an even greater privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.
Sergio, play your piano. Sergio, play your
tuned to PRN. We'll keep bringing you the best and alternative voices for social and political news, the environment, health, the economy, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is keep listening.